Mr. Brown?
Good morning.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Gary Brown, and I represent appellant Dr. Sheila Merrimark in this civil action. The Equal Employment Opportunity Act of 1972 granted to federal employees, including Dr. Merrimark, a cause of action in federal court if their employment opportunities were not equal because of their race or in retaliation for previously protesting unlawful EEO behavior. Dr. Merrimark has made such a claim. Now, specifically at issue here is a detail to the National Library of Education, a part of the Department of Education. The detail was promised to Dr. Merrimark, but never provided. Early on in the lower court's opinion, it becomes clear the facts were determined involving the context of that denial. Selectively, the lower court made it clear that context does matter. However, the factual findings were at least disputed. The factual findings made by the lower court were at least disputed, if not erroneous, and the lower court intruded into the province.
They weren't disputed by you, though.
Well, I believe they were, Your Honor. I'm not sure which you're talking about, but the two main overriding facts.
You filed a statement of material facts in dispute.
Well, if you're talking about the submission to the trial court, Your Honor, we did a submission of material facts in dispute. The trial court did raise how it was presented, the formatting.
You never complied with the local rule. You never filed a statement of material facts in dispute. The district judge, therefore, in resolving the matter, could have just decided it against you, but instead went to the trouble of going through the record. Now here you're up on appeal saying that the district court, you know, resolved issues that were really disputed, even though you never properly disputed them in the district court.
Well, you're wrong, Your Honor, in saying that we did not file a material facts in dispute document. In fact, we did.
Filed a memorandum, right?
No, we filed a separate document called Material Issues in Dispute. The lower court did not like the format of them. The lower court asked that the facts be lined up against the defendant's facts. We did not do that, Your Honor. I acknowledge that. I'm not sure that the local rule requires that. It would have been much more convenient for the court had we done that. But we did submit a Material Issues in Dispute document. Now, the lower court also, Your Honor, said that it would not, it would do its own review.
So you said you filed one, and the district court says on page 2 of the joint appendix that you have not provided a separate, concise statement of genuine issues setting forth all material facts, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. That is what she said. There is a document that the...
Okay. All right. I'll look at that.
That was filed. It was done in a way to raise the disputes that the plaintiff thought were most important, because and it was not lined up. It was not. They say this, and therefore we dispute it that way. I don't believe the local rule requires us to do that. But I did try to provide the count. Plaintiff did try to provide in the lower court those issues that were in dispute. But the trial court had two overriding facts that it wanted to rely upon to undermine Dr. Merrimark's claims. Those two facts that she never applied for any other positions, and that she only sought a method of rolling over her case, her position into a new permanent position, both of those facts were wrong. In fact, Dr. Merrimark did apply at least for three others. Her original claims included several applications that she had made during the relevant time period, but Dr. Merrimark did the right thing, and after the Supreme Court decided Amtrak v. Morgan, Dr. Merrimark withdrew her claims that had been earlier submitted in her original complaint. The fact that she was no longer seeking relief for those earlier claims did not mean that she did not want to use them as support for the claim that was timely under Morgan.
And the only claim here, the denial of the detail, is
specifically the only claim that does remain, Your Honor, is the one that for the denial of the detail.
And are you arguing that the denial of a detail is an adverse action?
Yes, Your Honor, and that would be another fact that we would hold that the lower court misapplied. That in fact it is an adverse action, for several reasons. One is that Mr. Dessy himself, the manager who was ostensibly in control of that detail, said that the detail itself was the best way to get Dr. Merrimark a permanent position in the National Library of Education. There is no question that Dr. Merrimark was seeking a permanent position, and this was one of the ways that she went about it. Mr. Dessy believed it was the best way. There was a declaration from a co-worker who was also seeking a position at the library, Ms. Humes, who said that in her declaration, she said Mr. Dessy said this is the best way. There was a document, email from Mr. Dessy himself, who said this is the only way that I know about to get you a permanent reassignment over here at the library. So she was pursuing what she thought was a reasonable way and was informed was the best way for her to get over to the National Library of Education. There's no question she wanted a permanent position, and I believe some of the language that the lower court uses would undermine the concept that Dr. Merrimark wanted to stay at the Department of Education. But Dr. Merrimark made it clear. In fact, the lower court did state that she, in her opinion on page 12, that she understood the objective of Dr. Merrimark was a permanent career position with the National Library of Education. And there's no question that Dr. Merrimark was qualified for such a position. The question is whether that detail would have led to the benefit of a permanent position there. I raised Ms. Humes before. I raise her again because she talks about in her declaration the way that the reorganization was happening, and I believe that's on 219 of the joint appendix, that the reorganization allowed supervisors to go out and recruit people. In fact, that's how this detail came about. Mr. Dessy was recruiting Barbara Humes. Barbara Humes then says that it's not only allowing supervisors to recruit people, but they can she says they can create positions because there was a reorganization going on. There were people floating around with different skill levels. There were new requirements for the different institutes and the library. So the Department of Education, I believe, in their wisdom, allowed managers to work with employees who were looking for different positions to fit together what was necessary to get the goals accomplished in the National Library of Education. Barbara Hume says that specifically, and that's where Dr. Merrimark was trying to go. I don't think it's unusual that such a situation would exist. And for example, Himmelfarb, who was one of the original claims in 1995, he did the same thing. He was told about a position. These are all facts that are in the record that the lower court did not rely upon. He was told about the position. He went for it. Within the 6 months, he was converted back into an educational specialist, and a year later, he was given a non-competitive promotion, providing him more money than before. The Department of Education wants to make it seem like there was only one thing that Dr. Merrimark was doing, trying to get a job and roll over into it. It was not true at all. She was seeking permanent employment. I'd like to save a little bit of my time if I could.
All right. Ms. Russell?
Good morning. May it please the court. We believe that the district court was correct in issuing summary judgment in this case after providing appellant with a full opportunity for discovery. A review of the record clearly demonstrates that the appellant only sought a detail, which is not an adverse action under Title VII, and thus is not actionable. The record indicates that the detail would have been approximately 5 months prior to appellant's term expiring. Appellant, however, fails to identify any material impact on her employment of this 5 month detail or the lack of effectuation thereof.
Well, the claim is that that would have put her in a better position to get permanent employment, right?
But there is nothing in the record indicating that a permanent position would have resulted, that it was promised, that it was on the
is
horizon.
Is there anything in the record indicating that any employee in this accepted service was ever converted to a permanent
employee? No, Your Honor, there isn't. Specifically, Mr. Himmelfarb, whom Mr. Brown referenced, applied for multiple positions, and the record indicated that he received a position and took a downgrade. So he received a permanent position after being competitively selected for that particular position. Mr. Brown indicated
the retaliation claim and the timing of, and I may be confused about this. Her anticipated detailing to the library was interrupted by two things. One, she claims, one, that Desi found out about her earlier EEO complaint. And am I right about this? And number two, that she was given work or a special project at DOE that prevented her from moving over there at the time? Or was she already engaged in that?
That is correct, Your Honor. She did make the allegation that she was given work, but she doesn't allege that that was discriminatory. She also alleges that Mr. Desi discovered her prior EEO activity, but once again, the record does not demonstrate that.
Well, the record demonstrates his assistant got her file.
The record does demonstrate that his assistant got her file, but the record does not demonstrate
and
that.
And she also alleges that he goes from being friendly to avoidant.
That is correct, Your Honor. But the record does not demonstrate that Mr. Desi saw that file. The record does not demonstrate. The appellant could have taken the deposition of the assistant, but did not. So the record does not, there's nothing in the record to demonstrate that Mr. Desi was aware of what was in that particular file.
Under the new definition that's in Burlington Northern of what constitutes adverse action for a retaliation claim, would denial of a detail be sufficient?
No, because there still has to be materiality, even under Burlington Northern. And there is no indication that that an adverse action occurred here, that there was some effect on the terms, conditions, or privileges of her employment. Essentially, she was denied a five-month detail. There's nothing in the record that there was any other impact on her employment, and thus there is no adverse action here.
But, well, what I understand Burlington to say is that if it was an action that would make an objective person reluctant to complain, you know, because that would be the result, you know, if the detail is something that benefits an employee, why would not denying a detail be something, you know, the kind of punishment for the exercise of protected activity?
Well, I think you put, Your Honor. I think you put the nail on the head when you said benefit the employee. Here, the appellant is alleging that because of the denial of the detail, that somehow adversely impacted her ability to obtain a permanent position with the Department of Education. But again, there is a lack of materiality here because there is no indication in the record at all that a permanent position was a viable outcome of the detail.
And is it also the case that she did not apply for all these outside source positions that people that she alleges somehow went from accepted to permanent did apply for?
That is correct, Your Honor. And actually, that is an argument that plaintiff made herself, that she was somehow lulled into not applying for positions because of the expectations of this detail. That is what she presented to the lower court. So the record, at least before the lower court, demonstrates that she did not, in fact, apply for positions. The appellant also indicated or also argued that Mr. Dessy, who was the head of the library at that time, somehow indicated that a permanent position could result from the detail, but that's not what the record suggests. I would respectfully refer the court to page, I believe it's 106 of the joint appendix. And essentially what Mr. Dessy is saying here is that he could only get her a detail, he could not, which is not the same as a reassignment. By no means is he discussing a permanent position with the library, simply a detail, and stating that it could not be characterized as a reassignment. But again, there's nothing to suggest in the record that a permanent position would have resulted from that detail, or could have resulted from that detail. So with respect to the detail, we respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the district court. And the same again with the retaliation claim. First, there is no temporal connection between the appellant's protected activity in 1995 and her detail, or the lack of effectuation of the detail in 1996 or 7, I believe. Second, there's just nothing in the record demonstrating any retaliatory animus on the part of the two supervisors involved or mentioned. One didn't even know of her prior EEO activity, and again, there's nothing in the record indicating a genuine issue and dispute in that regard. And the other actually helped effectuate a positive solution to that prior EEO administrative claim. So again,
is the first person you're talking about this Bozo or whatever?
No, the first person is Mr. Dessy. He did not know of her prior EEO activity. I would just like to summarize by requesting that this court affirm the decision of the district court.
If I could, please. You know, Mr. Basil was one person who was an example of why it was an adverse action. He was detailed over to the National Library of Education and then received a permanent position there at that time. The lower court dismissed him because he wasn't accepted service. But that's the box they had put her in, not that Dr. Merrimark volunteered to be in. And Dessy said to her, come over here, let's see what can happen, and this is your best way to look at it. I raised Himmelfarb as an example because she said she would have applied for that. And in fact, although the court repeatedly said she hadn't applied for it, she had applied for three other jobs in 1993, 1995, 1997, one of which she was deemed best qualified, was told by the interviewer that she would be selected, but she was then the job was canceled. And in the 1995 position with Himmelfarb, she said had she known about it, she would have applied. I wish I could explain more about the factual disparities in the lower court's decision. But
before you sit down, Mr. Brown, the next time you file a brief in this court, check the local rules. We require a glossary. And you have a lot of acronyms in, throughout your brief, OERI, NLE, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And your brief does not contain a glossary.
Well, I apologize for that, Your Honor. And I would also apologize for making extra work for the lower court in the way that we formatted our material issues of dispute. I apologize.
All right. Thank you.